You are listening to Packers Talk Radio Network. PackersTalk.com.
Kelly, I very much appreciate your conversation about Mason Crosby, but you were supposed to settle the point-counterpoint between Al and I.
Well,
should I flip a coin?
No, because one of us is right.
This is this is a no-win situation for me.
And we all know who that is. Come on. You don't have to flip anything.
You're listening to the best Packer radio show on the internet.
Cheesehead Radio.
I want to be a lifetime Cheesehead Green Bay Packer.
You're looking good today.
So let's go out there and whip that ass.
Aaron Rodgers is the best football player I've ever seen, ever.
Aaron Rodgers going deep on second and two. He's got a leap in Devontae Adams.
He's the best.
Defense is going to give a lot of teams struggles. We got a defense. Once again, we got a defense.
Cheesehead Radio.
Hello again, Cheesehead Nation. We are back with another episode of Cheesehead Radio in our 11th season. Your trio of hosts tonight are the timorous Kelly Hodgson, That Packer Girl on Twitter. Also joining us is the apprehensive CD Angeli, Tundra Vision on Twitter, and little old me, Jersey Al of Packers Talk and Cheesehead TV. You can find me at Jersey Al GBP on Twitter. Now, coming up later on the show will be our Hot Pockets and our game predictions. But first, it's time for the Packers Playbook.
The Playbook.
All right, Packer Nation, welcome back to Cheesehead Radio, the Green Bay Packers winners over the Carolina Panthers this past week. Perhaps just a little bit of a pattern we're seeing here. Get a nice big lead against an inferior team, and what kind of happens later in the game?
Holding on for dear life.
What is fall apart at the seams for 600, Alex?
But Packers on a four-game win streak, so you can't argue that. They're in command of, right now, the number one seed in the playoffs still. So everything's going well, but boy, you just get this little feeling of doubt, don't you, sometimes, that you can't hang on against an inferior team.
Yeah. yes, is the answer. much like Matt LaFleur's answer to a question on the press conference yesterday, the answer is yes. Did you see that at all?
I didn't see it. Did you see it, Kelly?
I did.
All right. Okay. Well, apparently you're the only one paying attention this week.
All right. I guess so.
Well, all right. Well, we are breaking up our conversation, as always, into four quarters of Packer football. So let's get started with our first quarter. Well, we're going to kick right into it, right where we left off. The offensive struggles against the Panthers. What went down? The Packers just cruised 21 points in that first half. We're like, this is going to be another 40-point game for Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers offense. They scored, what, 3 points the rest of the game? And looked really not that good doing it. I mean, they only had one drive of any consequence, really, from the end of the second quarter all the way to the end of the game. What's happened? What's the problem?
Well, they kind of set a bad tone for themselves with the very first drive. I think they got a little impatient and wanted to kind of go for the kill shot and put them away, which is nothing wrong with that, but they did it in a way that was not the way they were successful in the first half, right? They went away from running Aaron Jones, and on a 3rd and 7, as they're driving down the field, instead of just getting a first down and continuing to do what they did the first half, they try a long pass to MVS, who is not open even by 6 inches, and that kills the drive. And that kind of gave, I think, Carolina some real confidence, you know, that, hey, okay, we can stop these guys. And they were a different team the second half, their defense, absolutely. So I think the Packers kind of messed up there at the beginning of the second half and set the wrong tone for the rest of the half.
Well, I also don't think it helped that Rodgers was sacked five times, which really seemed uncharacteristic of the offensive line in the past couple games, where they just seemed to be a sieve.
Right, but I wouldn't blame it all on the offensive line. I mean, Lucas Patrick was, he just had the game, a nightmare game that he'll never want to remember, and hopefully the one-time thing. But, part of the problem, too, was Rodgers holding on to the ball. We got into that mode, as he was looking for those bigger plays and not taking the short throws that they were successful with the first half. He ended up in pressure and he wasn't able to get away.
And when that happens, he really ends up with tunnel vision. He's trying to force the one choice he has and he forgets the two other guys that are wide open.
Mm-hmm.
So I can think of one play where he ate it. And I think it was Davante Adams who was wide open and just really had minimal coverage on him.
Yeah, I mean, when he starts looking downfield like that and suddenly there's pressure on you, you don't always know where your other options are, because you were focused on that one part of the field. And he, like you said, he ended up just eating the ball a couple of times. It really wasn't necessary for him to do, I thought.
And looking at his stats, anecdotally, when he has a bad game like that and he can't find his targets and he's holding on the ball, that's when he tends to run. It wasn't much. He had a career high of 26 yards rushing, which tells me nothing was clicking because he tends to run when everything else falls apart.
Yeah.
And part of my conspiracy theory brain, which
get the tinfoil hats on.
Exactly. We were doing so well, and then it seemed like, they had been talking about Davante Adams, Packer record, a touchdown in 8 straight games, broke the record of Don Hutson, et cetera, et cetera. You could just see him aiming for Davante, and he was doing it. The interesting part is he was doing it early in drives. Like, you're on your own 30-yard line, and he's pitching these out patterns, those quick hitters way out to the sideline to get the ball in Devontae's hands because we had to get him the ball. And I'm like, if you're trying to get him a touchdown, why are you throwing essentially a long screen pass? Get the ball into the red zone. Then if you go back and he flashes open in the end zone, that's great. But it seemed like so many times he was just targeting and trying to get that ball to Davante Adams. And the Panthers were keying in on Adams, and believe it or not, they did a pretty effective job. And it just seemed to throw that whole offense, as you said, out of whack. It started affecting the offensive line. What's he going to do? Are we running the ball? Well, we're not running the ball. Is he going to stay back there? Is he pitching this way? I think that there's a dysrhythmia that results.
That's a big word.
Yes. There's a dysrhythmia that forms when Rodgers starts taking control of the game instead of playing within Matt LaFleur's offense.
Yeah.
You may not be wrong there.
No, actually, I'm right. I am actually right. Yes.
That was real confidence builder comment there. There's a chance you might be right.
Yeah, maybe.
You're saying there's a chance.
Yes, I'm saying there's a chance.
Oh, okay.
But this is something that I've noticed more so in the past two games where they just seem to fall apart second half. So we talk about adjustment. Yeah, I think they're having some problems adjusting. And neither of the teams the past 2 weeks were overly daunting, but they stymied the Packers. And when they tried to adjust, it seemed like it made it worse.
Well, we definitely have the Titans coming up. The Titans, not exactly defensive juggernauts.
But
you figure our offense should be able to execute against them because obviously they're going to need to, likely to keep up on the other side since Derrick Henry will be on the other side. But we'll bring that up in another quarter. That will bring us to the end of our first quarter. Now on to the second quarter, ladies and gentlemen. Yesterday, the Pro Bowl teams were announced. And last year, how many were on the Pro Bowl last year for the Packers? Was it three? Three players
not
made
many.
The Pro Bowl?
And I think it was one outright and weren't all together, like second team.
Yeah. Alternates, yeah. We had a couple of alternates.
Like Devontae was an alternate. I think Zadarius, who got snubbed because he wore the snub t-shirt. Right. But then I think he made it after people dropped out.
Injury, right, replacement.
Right.
He was
like the seventh or eighth, after
right.
seventh
so eighth that people. Really because doesn't count.
Because nobody really wants to ever play the Pro Bowl. Throw some sharks into the mix, flood the field, maybe I'll watch.
Well, they don't have to worry this year.
Right. So, Jersey, I'll take us through the people who made it. Who made the Pro Bowl this year for the Green Bay Packers?
Well, shockingly, Aaron Rodgers made it.
Really?
So that's a good start, yep. For the first time, Aaron Jones made it.
Well deserved.
Absolutely. Davante Adams.
He's okay.
Yeah. Four years in a row. One of the years was last year, like you said, he was an alternate. Za'Darius Smith, as we just mentioned. Bakhtiari. I think that was his third one. And interesting, Elgton Jenkins, rookie. When was the last time a rookie Packer made the Pro Bowl? I tried to look that up the other day. And
I can't even think of one.
Yeah, I couldn't
either. Clay Matthews is his rookie year or not?
I don't know if he made the Pro Bowl. I mean,
Bucky Scribner?
Perhaps? Yeah, that's totally the choice. Scribner, okay. Oh my gosh. Yes, we're all three of us are old enough to know who that is.
And finally, Jair Alexander made it, much, you know, well-deserved there. He's finally getting the recognition he deserves.
But this really goes to show that when you're at the top of the league, you whether you deserve it or not, get more picks or more choices or selections of the Pro Bowl. Because you look at, like, Za'Darius Smith. Yeah, he's having an okay season, but he got snubbed last year when it was a vastly...
Well, that's a makeup pick.
That's a makeup pick, but
that's
yeah.
That's a makeup. Yeah, but we were the same record last year. 11, I mean, we finished with only 3 losses, and, you know, it wasn't the same. So I think some of these are, you know, finally come along. It should have come along sooner is what I'm trying to say. And we have players that made it, but there's also other players that very easily could have made it.
Kelly, why don't you take us through the snubs?
Okay, the snubs.
You're in charge of snubs, Kelly.
Okay, would be the big ones you hear about throughout the media are Corey Linsley,
mm-hmm.
Large Robert Tonyan,
which
that one we'll get to in a minute, and Adrian mm-hmm. Amos. But I'm also going to throw in there, because he's been so rock solid, is how come Mason Crosby never gets any love? That's a personal one I'm just going to throw into the mix.
No, I think it's actually very valid. I mean, the guy hasn't missed a field goal. Is there anybody else in the NFC who hasn't missed a field goal with that many attempts? I doubt it.
But you look at Tonyan, and who was the one that was picked? Like, he's got twice as good of stats than this guy.
Evan Engram.
Engram, that's who it was. And he's got, like, okay stats. But yeah, but Tunyon's got twice as many touchdowns and almost, I think, twice as many receptions.
I wrote about this today, actually, and I mean, I get the Giant games here, so I've seen plenty of Evan Engram, and there is no way he belongs in the Pro Bowl. He just does not. I mean,
is that a pity pick for the Giants, because they're kind of awful?
I don't know, but I called it like the worst pick in a history of awful Pro Bowl picks, something along those lines. I forgot my exact wording, but. Because really, if you watch him play, he's only had 1 year where he actually did fairly well, and that was his rookie season. Since then, nowhere near the level of what Tonyan has done this year. Never mind touchdowns. Look at catch percentages. You know, Tonyan is like 89%, and Engram has been in the 50s, and I think his best was 60%, or I think that's this year he's close to 60%. So not even close. And Engram is known, ask any Giants fan, and they will tell you Engram has dropped every big important pass that was ever thrown to him.
Oh, so he's got Jimmy Grahamitis or what?
I don't know what you want to call it, but it's
Jimmy Grahamitis.
And that's not a quantitative thing, you know, but
well, that's totally qualitative.
Right. But hey, it matters, you know. If you ask me, it matters. So, and even, you know, I would argue against Engram, even if Tonyan had one touchdown and had no reason to be in the Pro Bowl. Just the fact that they voted for him as one of the two best tight ends in the NFC is a travesty. A travesty, I tell you.
So let me ask this dumb question. I mean, obviously. These are voters. These are voters who are going online and click, 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 or hitting tweets, or however you vote for it.
That only counts for a small percentage.
Right.
Coaches and players vote.
But even with that, Robert Tonyan has not been a household name. He's not a recognizable. He is definitely to us. He's a recognizable name to us. But he's really just breaking out this season. Fantastic season. You know, George Kittle-like season, to be quite honest with you. Is it just simply, I don't know any of the names on this list, so I'm just going to pick New York because, you know, that's where the NFL's headquartered or something?
In that case,
did he get every one of his relatives to vote for him? What the heck?
I mean, I don't know. I just cannot explain that one. That's just an awful, awful selection.
I guess if it were something, you know, because you have to understand a tight end isn't all about pass catching and receiving. Obviously, there's a lot of blocking involved and, you know, you can have a very good productive tight end who may not catch a lot, but is, you know, running over people and open up holes for receivers and running backs and things like that. But I don't see this Ingram doing that either.
Well, you got, tight ends tend to get accolades, which is unfortunate because that's definitely a skill. It's usually the Joker type tight ends that get noticed. And Ingram, if I were to give him a grade, I'd say C+ on a good day.
Yeah, Ingram's got one touchdown pass.
That's it?
One.
One, and he's Pro Bowl?
Logan Thomas, Washington, has 5. Why not name Logan Thomas? He's got 62 receptions, more than Evan Ingram, and 5 touchdowns to 1. Here's another guy that got snubbed because of Evan Ingram.
So was this one of these situations where Steve Harvey announced the wrong winner? I'm like, okay, I guess we're stuck with it now.
Dallas, Dalton Schultz, whoever the hell that is, 53 receptions, 53 receptions, 4 touchdowns.
So still better than Ingram. We don't know who the crap he is.
We even know who he is.
Who the hell is it when I saw
like, what does he look Ingram? Like? What hair color does he have?
I have no idea who that guy is, but he's got better stats than Ingram.
You've got stats up.
It's a travesty.
It is complete travesty because Big Bob gets the job done. And that's not just me being an insufferable homer. I feel like he was truly snubbed for like the first random dude they drew out of a hat.
Yeah.
It's like, and the Pro Bowl selection for the NFC is, you know, just paper, Thaddeus Collins.
Ooh. Well, I will say this. The one thing I am happy about, because, you know, obviously the NFL, for them to play an all-star game, obviously even baseball and basketball, you know, there's the risks. You got all this money invested in these players. But football, obviously, the Pro Bowl really hasn't been a spectacle for the last 50 years that they've played it or so.
I don't even remember the last time I watched a Pro Bowl, exactly. To be honest.
And because you can't. I mean, these guys can't go all out. There's too many injuries. There's too much damage that can happen to extremely expensive investments. So I'm actually happy because I've said this for years. I've said, don't even bother playing the game. I said, just do it on Madden. And I guess what they're doing this year?
They're
going to do it on Madden.
We need all Madden.
Well, this is how stupid the Pro Bowl was for years when it used to be held in Hawaii. Hey, yeah, you get a free trip to Hawaii if you're a player, so they would go. But my cousin and her husband lived 15 minutes tops up the highway from the stadium, and they're huge Packer fans because they're from Wisconsin. They're like, we're not going to waste our time or effort to go to the Pro Bowl because it's hella lame and we live in Hawaii.
Well, luckily, guys, that's not the game that really matters for the Packers, and I know there's a much bigger game that's on the horizon. And as we finish the second quarter, good half here, guys. I think that's definitely two successful drives. We're going to go into halftime, and we're going to go into our third quarter topic. Derrick Henry.
And if you didn't follow him in his tenure at Alabama, yeah, he's as good as advertised.
I think Derrick Henry, the running back for the Tennessee Titans, who is having the only non-quarterback MVP talk for this season. And that's how good of a season he's having. I mean, pretty much, you know, MVPs are really coming down quite a bit to just quarterbacks. But here's a guy who was just running through people. Packer fans collectively have already said, okay, he's going to have his 240 yards rushing. How are we going to try to beat the Titans otherwise? I mean, we're just basically looking at the type of season he's having, the type of run defense that we have, and saying, yeah, he's just going to run wild on us. How can we win?
We have to hang 50 points on the other team. That's how we can win. And I don't know if that's possible. But yeah, he is dangerous. And he's averaging similar to Aaron Jones, a little over 5 yards per rush. But because he is their rock star and he isn't dividing time, he's got twice the stats of Aaron Jones. He's had 321 attempts at rush. He's had 1,679 yards, and there's a couple games left. He has 15 rushing touchdowns. But this is where he's different than Aaron Jones. He's not really handsy. He has zero receiving touchdowns this year and one fumble. But put him on the ground, and that is our Achilles heel. And I worry, yeah, he's going to run for 250 yards and about three or four touchdowns, because that's going to be how they try to beat us. It's going to be on the ground.
Well, it's how they can beat us.
have to hang 50 points to get ahead of them. And if we play like we did last week, we are in trouble.
Curious how many receptions Henry has. Let me look it up here real quick.
Well, he hasn't scored anything in the air.
19, so very few.
But I think that's the difference between Aaron Jones and Derrick Henry. Aaron Jones, and you guys know how big of a fan I am of him. He is electrifying. He is, you know, he'll go through you. He goes around you. He runs out. He catches passes like he's a wide receiver. He just does all this stuff. Derrick Henry gets the ball and he goes through you and picks people up and throws them with the stiff arm.
He is a bowling ball.
This is not the same type of running back.
He can outrun you, too.
Yes.
He's a fast bowling
That's
ball.
That's the amazing part.
Yeah, you'd think he'd be like an Eddie Lacy, kind of lumbering. No. The same school, different skill set.
So what do the Packers have to do to limit him, to slow the hemorrhaging? How do we get this under control and force them to go into more of a passing attack?
We have to play like the time we stopped Barry Sanders for -1 yards. We have to get lucky like that. I don't think it's going to happen, but we have to actually stop the run, which has been a problem all year. So,
actually, we have to just score a bunch of points in the first quarter.
Hang 50 on them. On.
It's got to be 21-7 after the first quarter.
Kind of like last week?
Yeah, I'm being kind. I'm being kind giving them 7 because, you know, I think Henry probably will score a touchdown, but
honest to God, we have to keep their offense off the field is what we have to do.
Well that's what they're going to try to do to us.
I think one thing we have to do is we have to count on our defense to force some turnovers this week. If you're looking at Henry, who can get the ball and just take that ball down the field, at some point you have to deny them an opportunity. And if it's going to be hard to get them to fourth down, because it is, because of the guy's averaging 5 yards a rush, he literally will get a first down on every two carries. Getting those turnovers, you know, when Tannehill does have to go back and make that pass, getting those turnovers, being opportunistic, maybe putting a helmet on the ball and seeing, I don't know how many fumbles. He does have one fumble. Derrick Henry has one fumble on the year. Let's make it 3 by the end of the night. And I think the Packers really have a chance to stymie him and force Tannehill to do some more passing to come from behind.
Oh, absolutely. You have to force him to pass. And that's where I think you can beat him. Tannehill's a good quarterback, but I don't think any of their receivers really stand out. They really rely on Henry.
All right. And that takes us to the end of the third quarter. I would say those are 2 wins, and Derrick Henry doesn't sound like a win right now.
Derrick Henry's already giving me a headache.
Yes. 2-1. So now we move on to the fourth quarter. Ladies and gentlemen, the Green Bay Packers right now hold the #1 seed in the playoffs. We've debated at times whether hosting the playoffs all the way through Lambeau Field is the best thing. We seem to think it is, although we've certainly seen how the Packers have played at home in inclement weather this season. Hopefully, as Aaron Rodgers talks about what an advantage it is to play in the really cold weather that it really is. But let's say that we want to maintain this #1 seed in the playoffs. I think we do. What do the Packers have to do right now to maintain that at the end of game #16?
Well, we've got a bunch of scenarios.
Scenario SL, scenario S.
Pluto is in line with Jupiter.
I'll give you the scenarios. Scenario 1 is the surest thing. Packers win out. That's all. Win 2 games. Nobody can have the same record as that. Scenario 2, Packers beat the Titans this week and the Rams beat the Seahawks. They advance because both the Rams and the Seahawks would be 10-5. The Packers would finish the season with the best record, regardless of what happens the following week. So we're rooting for the Rams this week. obviously.
That's not hard to do.
Yeah, especially against the Seahawks, no doubt.
We're actually one of the only people in, you know, the nation rooting for the Rams, so that, yeah, they could
certainly
probably
isn't Los support. Angeles.
All right, so that's scenario two. Scenario three, it doesn't matter what we do this week, as long as we beat the Bears in week 17. So
keep
the Packers,
keep in mind, that is at Soldier Field.
If the Packers lose in week 16 to the Titans and beat the Bears in week 17, the Packers would finish at 12-4. And even if the Saints and Seahawks finish 12-4, they already have the tiebreaker over the Saints head-to-head. And by beating Chicago, they'd have a better conference record, which would give them the tiebreaker over the Seahawks. So even if they lose this week to the Titans, they just have to beat the Bears. And it doesn't matter what anyone else does. And then the worst case scenario, Packers lose both of these games. They can still make it if the Saints, Seahawks, and Rams all lose once. Not very likely. So Green Bay really needs to win at least one of these games. And now, according to the website 538, who figures out these things, the Packers have a 79% chance to win the top spot in the NFC. Those are pretty good odds. That's 4 out of 5 chance, almost.
I'm a big fan of Nate Silver, so I will take it.
Big fan of Nate Silver.
Yeah, he's got to run 538. Yeah.
Oh, I had no idea. I didn't even hear.
Okay. I'll believe Nate Silver before I believe, like, PFF anymore, I think. Or DVOA.
Give me Nate Silver.
Give me Nate Silver.
You know, I think it's kind of fun. It's like you're getting the political number nerds now covering football. You have Nate Silver, and you also have Steve Kornacki that's now a fun fixture on Sunday Night Football. It's like, bring out the board and nerd out, buddy.
Yeah, I'm actually not a fan of the way he does it, though, with the percentages, where he's focusing on percentage chance.
He's a numbers nerd, though.
I know, but there's other things you could do there that I'd prefer, but that's just me personally. Anyway.
All right, so the road to the playoffs and the number one seed will start Sunday night against the Titans, and hopefully we won't have to worry that much about playing the Bears and can rest some starters along the way, but if not, as Al has illustrated for us, there's still a chance.
We have options.
Definitely have a lot of roads, and I'd rather have all these roads than none. So
this is time for Rodgers to bring out the, well, if we run the table. Run the table, buddies. Get it done.
Well, run the table and win the Super Bowl, too. It would be great.
That would be totally awesome.
Yeah. All right, and that brings us to the end of the fourth quarter. I think we won. That's a 3-1 record today. Three good newses and maybe one scary news there.
Good performance, guys.
Well done. Well done all around. We're improving.
Yay, us.
It's all about growth. With that, we are going to hit our Hot Pocket. We've reached the point in the show where each of us get one final moment to get up on our soapbox and reach the riot act of whatever is going on inside our head. This is our Hot Pockets. Jersey Al Bracco, as always, we'll start with you.
Why do we always start with me?
I don't know. Alphabetical order?
We just do. Okay. okay.
Oh, first names. That's what we're going with. Okay.
Keep up, Kelly.
I love me some Matt LaFleur. I love the energy he brings. I love the more modern concepts and innovation and ideas that he brings forward. I love the way he answers questions at press conferences. I'm certainly not alone in this regard. And there have been plenty of recent rumblings as to why a coach with his won and loss record isn't mentioned in the Coach of the Year talk. Well, as much as I'm a fan, this Coach of the Year stuff really should stop. Until his team learns how to not let middling teams they are beating soundly stick around and make things uncomfortable in the fourth quarter, that talk can just stop. Now, hopefully, the Packers will get there one day, and then we can all hop on board. But until that happens, we need to just forget about Coach of the Year, and that is my
Hot Pockets.
Oh, Jersey, yeah. I'm going to take the counterpoint to your point, team. Matt LaFleur is Coach of the Year. He's coach of the last 2 years, period. This team is cruising. The offense is as good as it was back in 2011. And this team literally is half the talent, especially at wide receiver and tight end, and a quarterback twice the age. If the offense runs as LaFleur says to run it, it runs like a top. They have all the cylinders hitting to score 40 points a game. They can do this every week, week in and week out, until the quarterback decides that it's time to start calling his own plays. Because it's been so successful for us when he goes back in the pocket and waits for 8 seconds for someone to get open, right? Rodgers deciding that despite the offense absolutely killing it for the first half, how it was so important to get the ball to Davante Adams to get his touchdown streak extended, it derailed the entire game. Look, Aaron Rodgers, as far as I'm concerned, is the GOAT. But if we're going to make it through the playoffs, this GOAT needs to defer to the coach of the year right now. Rodgers has all the skills, he has the experience, he has the brains, he's got all of it. But LaFleur is the man with the plan that's going to get us there. And that is my
Hot Pockets.
I'm going to switch gears and talk about somebody else. What can I say about Mason Crosby that hasn't already been said about the man? Okay, so he's missed a few extra points. All right, three. But so have other dependable kickers. Wasn't that the whole point of making the attempt longer? The man simply has ice water in his veins. Now, while I haven't watched a field goal attempt since 1996, hey, it's not weird if it works, I knew he was going to seal the deal. And he won the game for us. But here's the thing. The Green Bay Packers, with all of their tools in their bat utility belt, Rodgers, Jones, Adams, should never have to put the team in a situation where its kicker is going to have to save them from themselves. The Titans aren't the team that we hung 55 points on a few years ago. They're going to give the Pack trouble. And the last thing I want is to be hiding in my sweatshirt as Mason's trying to save the day once again as time expires. The team needs to stay in it the whole time, and that means 60 minutes of solid ball on both sides. We need momentum heading into the playoffs, not coasting on empty as January approaches. Get it together, Packers. And that is my
Hot Pockets.
Kelly, I very much appreciate your conversation about Mason Crosby, but you were supposed to settle the point-counterpoint between Al and I.
Well.
Should I flip a coin?
No, because one of us is right.
This is a no-win situation for me.
And we all know who that is. Come on. You don't have to flip anything. It's okay. It's okay.
Yeah, this is a no-win situation.
That is the quietest I've ever heard Kelly.
Right?
Because it's like, who's going to get even with me more if I side against them? It's like, okay, who's going to have sabotaged the script more if I say, well, you know, CD's right, or if Al's right? I'm Switzerland right now, gentlemen.
Coward.
You got it.
Cheesehead Radio. Packer Game Predictions.
Well, this is the one we've all been waiting for. It's the last game on the schedule against a playoff-caliber opponent. And on Sunday Night Football, the Green Bay Packers take on the Tennessee Titans. The Packers start out at home as 3.5-point favorites. So it's really a pretty narrow advantage head-to-head for the Pack. How do we see this one going? Kelly, we'll start with you.
Oh, this game makes me nervous. I followed Henry since his college career in Alabama, and he makes me even more nervous than I was earlier in the week. But the Packers know what they need to do, and that is finally trying to figure out how to stop the run. This is a great time to do it. If not, it's going to be one ugly game this weekend, but I'm optimistic that I think they'll pull it off in a close one. Packers 30, Titans 24, last one with the ball wins.
Well, I've certainly looked a little foolish predicting blowouts the last two games. I don't think the third time will be the charm either. We're at that point in the season where there are no easy games. Just ask the Rams or the Steelers about that. I would have called this a close game regardless of when it was being played, but for sure, I now expect a closely contested game that could go either way. I'm picking the Packers to pull one out by a score of 31-27.
Way back when, with six games to go, I predicted that the Green Bay Packers would finish 5-1 down the stretch. Well, they've won four in a row, and now they have the Titans and the Bears left on the schedule. Yes, in part, I just can't stand the thought of the Packers losing to the Bears. But more so, this game isn't the big one we need to win. We know the Bears game is the one that we just win and we're in. This is a great test. This is the, I want to win this one. We should win this one. This is a great game to prove that we're belonging in the playoffs and we're a good team and can play with the big boys. But in the end, there's been just too much inconsistency against the lesser teams over this stretch that make me believe Sunday night isn't going to be the Packers' night. Tennessee Titans 30, Packers 21.
Oh, look, CD is the doomsayer. Let me find my shocked face.
He's actually been well behaved this year. He hasn't.
Oh, he's always going to say
doomsayer.
Yeah. No, this year he's actually been not himself.
Dogs and cats living together. The Packers are going to get demolished.
Yeah, I feel like you're overreacting.
No, that's totally you.
I totally feel like you're like, I think I picked them to lose.
Packers suck like a hooter. They're going to lose by 55 points.
Why did we all just turn into pirates? what's going on here?
A bad Bill Murray, I think.
What's going on? No, look, CD just wants to make his 5-1 prediction correct. So he's got to pick a loss. So he picked this because he didn't want to pick the Bears. I totally understand it.
Oh, my God. I hope they win just so we don't have to hear him crowing that he was right next
week.
He's
just trying to justify his prediction. I get it.
He's a punk.
I get it.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight on Cheesehead Radio, now in our 11th season. Make sure to head over to PackersTalk.com, where you can explore several unique Packers podcasts. Please follow us at PackersTalk.net on Twitter and like us on Facebook. Cheesehead Radio and all Packers Talk podcasts are available on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or your favorite podcatching app. You can also find us on Siri, Alexa, or Google just by saying, "Play Packers Talk Podcast." That's a wrap. Go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.
Cheesehead Radio.
Wine.
See, we're all equal opportunity buttheads. You know that, right?
Okay.
True.